let me ask you about crypto, which there's a piece out. I think maybe CNBC even talked to money managers, and that is ripe in 75% of those polled. That's ripe for a major correction or a major letting out of a lot of air in that sector. Does that sound like consensus, something to go the other way on to you or not?
Well, yes, I believe it is. I think institutions are moving in. And right now, crypto of any sort, they're starting with Bitcoin and Ether, crypto of any sort is a de minimis amount or percentage of institutional portfolios. The reason institutions are moving in is, to some extent, this is a new asset class with correlations very different compared to other asset classes. In fact, Yassine Almandra did a study on this and found that the closest, and we did it with Bitcoin, the closest correlation among or to other assets was real estate. And so institutional managers have to look at new asset classes that are evolving that have low correlations. That's the key to diversification. And it's the holy grail in terms of asset allocation. So we think that the move actually by institutions into Bitcoin, if we were to choose Bitcoin, and that seems to be their first stop, could add $500,000 to Bitcoin's price if they moved into the tune of roughly 5% over time.
Kathy, you can talk.
Happy Bitcoin Tuesday, freaks. It's your boy, Matt Odell, here for another Citadel Dispatch, the interactive live show about Bitcoin, distributed systems, privacy, and open source software. Huge shout out to the ride or die freaks who continue to support the show, keeping it ad-free, sponsor-free, and just focused on actionable Bitcoin discussion. The easiest way to support the show is through podcasting 2.0 apps. My favorite two are Fountain Podcasts and Breeze Wallet. Download one of those apps, search Citadel Dispatch, load it up with sats, and then you can stream sats directly to my Lightning node. You can also support the show at CitadelDispatch.com, either through Lightning or on-chain through a paynim. And as always, a big shout out to the freaks who continue to join us week in and week out in our live chat via Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube. You guys make this show very special with your live comments and questions. So thank you so much for that. I really do appreciate it. Couple of pieces of homework before we get started here. We have a new Matrix chat focused on Dispatch. You can find that at citadel.chat. That is going to be similar to a Discord or Slack experience if you are used to that, but instead it is self-hosted, open source, and end-to-end encrypted. So definitely check that out. We already have a really good group of freaks there. And we have one dedicated to TFTC at tftc.chat as well. And also, I hope all you freaks enjoy your holidays with your friends and your family. Dispatch will be taking a holiday break until January 4th. So the next two Tuesdays, we will be taking off January 4th. I have a massive show lined up for us already that I'm pretty excited about. Rabbit Hole Recap will not be taking a break because we never take breaks for Rabbit Hole Recap for 3 years in a row. So you can still find me every Thursday on Rabbit Hole Recap. As always, all shows are available through the podcast feed after the fact. And also on BitcoinTV.com if you prefer that. So with all that said, a very exciting guest today, someone I consider a good friend who does a lot of work for Bitcoin that some people might not appreciate fully. This is Citadel Dispatch 48. We will be discussing the Bitcoin initiatives being done by Block, formerly known as Square, and Spiral, formerly known as Square Crypto. And we got Steve Lee here, Moneyball on Twitter. I don't know how he got the Moneyball Twitter handle. That's a fire Twitter handle. How's it going, Steve?
Hey, Matt. Thanks. Thanks for having me. It's going great.
How long have you had that Moneyball Twitter handle for?
I think, since 2007 or 2008?
That's a primo handle.
Yeah, I have Moneyball on most services.
Wow. Impressive. Truly impressive.
I like the book. So
who doesn't? So you are, what's your official title at Spiral?
I don't really have an official title, but I'm the lead for Spiral.
You're the main guy. Top dog.
Well, we're a decentralized distributed team, so I'm the lead for Spiral.
So we have a great list. I mean, you guys are doing between Spiral and between the greater initiatives at Block, you guys are doing a ton of work in the Bitcoin space. A lot of it is open source focused. So where do we want to get started? We don't have it on the list, but do you want to talk a little bit about the name change to Spiral first?
Yeah, we can start there. So as folks probably know, and you already mentioned, that the entire company changed its name from Square to Block for a bunch of good reasons. And since the brand Square is now, you know, very directly and specifically the original Square business, point of sale terminals, it's not really related to what Spiral does. So the name Square Crypto really didn't make sense anymore. And really from the beginning, we were asked a lot of questions about the name Square Crypto because we are such an independent group from the company itself. Having Square in the name didn't seem right. And then especially from the Bitcoin community and Bitcoin crowd being named Crypto, people wanted us to, you know, rebrand to Square Bitcoin or something. It was a good opportunity for us to change our name. We wanted to keep something very, very simple and clean. So we went through an exercise and came up with the name Spiral, which we're super happy with.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty awesome name. And your new website is awesome, spiral.xyz.
Yeah, thank you. Anyone who's followed our Twitter account knows that the blue spiral emoji is something we always play with and sort of part of our voice and brand. So it partially stems from that.
Well, congratulations on that. I'm sure that's been a long time coming and a bit of an organizational headache rather than focusing on the other projects you guys are working on.
Yeah. We also came out with a film. I don't know if you wanted to talk about the film.
Oh, the film was awesome with Puppet Jack.
The Puppet Jack film. Yeah.
Whose idea was that?
There's a guy, Ken, on our team. He's the mastermind behind our Twitter account, and he's the creative on our team. So he came up with the idea. It's something like Lightning Network and LDK, which we'll talk about, the Lightning Development Kit. You know, they're very technical, very much in the weeds. So we wanted to create something that sort of communicated what we're up to, what the benefits are, but do it in a way that's a little more appealing to a broader audience. And hence the film. And so we came up with a puppet representing Jack. And then tried to add some humor to it as well.
No, it was really great. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to be able to, you completely changed the game of advertising development kits.
Right. It's hard to take something that's kind of dry and boring to most people and make it entertaining. So hopefully that sets a bar for the broader Bitcoin space and really software and tech in general.
This is a good launching point because the first thing we have on the list is LDK, which was the main focus. I felt like it was the main focus of the video, but also kind of the focus was like get to know the Spiral team, which I liked. I thought it was a nice touch because people tend to forget that there's humans behind these things. So LDK, what is LDK? Why should we care? Why is it important?
Yeah, LDK stands for Lightning Development Kit. And it's users and its target is for other developers. We're just trying to make it easier for other developers to integrate Lightning Network services into their wallets. It differs from the other Lightning implementations in that it's not in and of itself a node or a wallet. It's a software library that allows other developers to customize and build their own Lightning node. A couple of years ago, when we were deciding which project the full-time team at Spiral was going to work on, we did a lot of homework. We reached out to dozens and dozens of developers and wallets and asked them what was either preventing them from adding Lightning Network or what challenges they'd faced while adding it. Also spoke with some projects that ended up implementing their own implementation of the Lightning Network protocol, which is very complicated. So we came to the conclusion that if we really want to see the space accelerate and grow and see lots of different experiments for wallets and nodes and out there, we needed to make it easier and better for developers. So we got started on Lightning Development Kit. We started with the Rust Lightning project that Matt Carallo had started. So it's implemented in the language called Rust. But two years later, it's taken a lot of time to build out a commercial quality implementation. We've also invested a significant amount of time on language bindings. It's another thing we learned from speaking with developers. They would be hesitant to integrate a library that was written in a language that they themselves aren't using. So if you're building an iPhone, you might be using Swift language or React Native, and every different platform. There's many different languages used by wallet developers. So while the LDK is written in Rust, we wanted to build out native APIs in Java and Swift and other languages to make it easier for developers.
Awesome. Just to pull back a little bit, when you said other, app developers were basically writing Lightning implementations from scratch, I mean, the two that come to mind to me were Breeze and Simple Bitcoin Wallet. Is there another one that comes to mind to you?
Yeah, I was like Electrum is one example.
Oh, right. Electrum, Python Lightning implementation that everyone forgets about.
Yep. And, so I can't speak for the Electrum project, but, if I were contributing to the Electrum project, I definitely wouldn't have wanted to implement and maintain over time yet another Lightning implementation. So it'd be much easier to be able to integrate a high quality open source one that was customizable and flexible enough to meet their needs. And that's what we've heard from many other existing Lightning wallets, especially on mobile phones, to get the right user experience on mobile is quite difficult, often resulting in trade-offs. You can see this with Phoenix and Moon and Breeze and Blue Wallet. So
they all have different trade-offs.
And they all have different trade-offs, which is good. It's good and healthy. This isn't easy right now. There's many trade-offs you can make. I think it's healthy for Bitcoin to have lots of different wallets, lots of different recipes out there. And just being transparent, letting people know what am I trading off with respect to privacy or security or other issues, to try to get the right user experience.
Right. So go on.
Sorry. I was just going to say, LDK has been designed and architected to be very modular and a library that allows those wallet developers to make those types of trade-offs without needing to go modify or maintain their own Lightning implementation.
So you take away, at its core, it's this idea that the app developers, the wallet developers, don't really have to focus that hard on the actual Lightning component. They can focus on everything else around it.
That's correct. And also the LDK doesn't come bundled with its own on-chain wallet. I believe all the other major Lightning implementations do. So it's really intended for like an existing Bitcoin wallet, or for even if it's a wallet built from scratch, a developer who has in their own mind how they want to do the key storage and what block data sources they're going to use, whether it's full blocks or complex compact block filters, or there's lots of ways to get the sort of the source of truth we want to allow the developers to choose that and not sort of dictate that for them.
Interesting. So would you say that LDK is mobile focused, or is it just mobile friendly but agnostic?
I'd say it's mobile first. I mean, I think the sweet spot for LDK is non-custodial mobile. That's where I'd say it shines relative to other options. But it can certainly be used. LDK can be used server side and enterprise and custodial environments as well. I think where it might be attractive for the latter situation is anyone looking to improve security or scalability and really wanting to go deeper scaling that. The modular architecture and the customizability of LDK may prove beneficial in that environment. But definitely mobile is where LDK has been built to be high performance, run in environments that don't have as many resources as, you know, server side and data centers.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us tend to agree, that the next billion users that onboard onto Bitcoin and start using Bitcoin will probably be doing it from a mobile first perspective. So that makes a lot of sense to me. And also, there's just massive pain points with Lightning on mobile right now. So when you put the two of those together, making it easier for us to have more fully functioning Lightning wallets on mobile and enabling developers to build those wallets is a very important task. So I do really appreciate you guys working on that. So you mentioned it doesn't have an on-chain component. I know we don't have this on the list. I don't know if you can speak to it that much, but I think you have Steve Myers on your team that is working on Bitcoin Development Kit, BDK.
Yeah, would love to speak about BDK.
Can that be used like with LDK? So you have like the on-chain component plus Lightning component?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So Steve Myers is one of our grantees. So just so everyone knows, Spiral has a full-time development team of four developers, and they're focused on LDK. We also have a grant program where we've given grants to over several dozen developers, including Steve Myers, but also several others who are contributing to BDK, Bitcoin Development Kit, which, as you just mentioned, it's really like a sibling project to LDK. It complements LDK. It's the on-chain Bitcoin protocol equivalent of LDK. So they are independent projects. But having said that, I definitely imagine them one day sort of merging, and just there should just be a free open source Bitcoin SDK. And in my mind, it'll be these two projects combined. But even today, even though they're independent projects, they're intended to work together. And another Spiral grantee, John Cantrell, is building a reference wallet that's based on both BDK and LDK. So I think in his reference wallet, he's using BIP 157, 158 compact block filters to get block data. He's getting that through the BDK, and BDK also provides, like fee estimation and coin selection and all the things, all the components you need for an on-chain wallet. And then he's using that in conjunction with LDK to enable Lightning.
Awesome. And John is being funded by Spiral as well, right? He's part of the grant program.
He is. Yep.
You guys, I don't think you have like a list of your grant recipients anywhere.
We do on our website. So spiral.xyz.
Oh, it's up there now?
Yeah.
For a while, like, I feel like you were just like tweeting it out.
Yeah.
It was like hard to follow.
So everyone can check out spiral.xyz to see, who we've given grants to, what they're up to. And then with the rebrand to Spiral a couple of weeks ago, we published a post, which you can find on our website as well, which really looks back, reflects on the past couple of years, what we've accomplished, what we've done, and then pointing to the future. We're going to do basically more of the same. We're happy to keep supporting Bitcoin in as many ways as possible.
That's awesome. And just to be clear, I mean, it was hard to follow in a good way. It was just, I felt like every week you guys were releasing another grant. really hit the ground running. The amount of work that is being funded out of your project is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and getting back to BDK and LDK, I mean, again, it's our hope that, I mean, imagine if you were building, you know, a mobile app for iPhone and there was no development kit, or you had to go and as a developer, you're just trying to build like a gaming app or a communications app or something like that, and you had to go modify iOS or the SDK yourself. That's not really a great environment for seeing a massive explosion of creativity and new applications. So our hope is that with these development kits, we really improve the Bitcoin developer user experience by a substantial amount. And hopefully over the next several years, we see a lot more, even more creativity than we've seen so far.
Yeah, I mean, it seems ultimately the goal that most Bitcoiners want, and in my opinion should want, is to have as many options available to use Bitcoin with varying trade-offs. And it has seemed in the past that the major hurdle to that is this friction of actually building solid, stable Bitcoin apps and Bitcoin wallets, and having proper foundation for that. I mean, just got to reduce the friction tremendously. So hopefully we'll see many more good wallets in the future.
We haven't mentioned it yet, but I mean, a lot of people wonder what's the status of LDK? Like, can it be used? Is it ready now? It is ready now. Blue Wallet, which is a wallet many of your listeners probably are familiar with.
100%.
It's, you know, Blue Wallet has supported Lightning Network for quite a while now, but it's been, at least by default, custodial Lightning. They wanted to move to non-custodial on mobile, and they did an evaluation and chose LDK as that toolkit for all the reasons that we created LDK. So we're really happy that they chose LDK. And it's, I think they have like an alpha version that's been available for several months now. So that's exciting. And we're also seeing a lot of traction from other big services. Hopefully in the next few months, we'll see some other services that your listeners either use or are very familiar with that'll enable Lightning using LDK.
So their goal is to release, that's not a general release yet, right? Like if you go to the App Store or something like that, you won't get the LDK version of Blue Wallet yet.
That's correct. I still think there's a few things that are a bit unrelated to LDK that they're shoring up for the next release. I'm not sure exactly what their schedule looks like, but hopefully early next year.
That makes a lot of sense to me, because I did notice in the LDK Spiral video that Puppet Jack was spending with Blue Wallet, and I was wondering why that choice was made. So now I know.
The Blue Wallet team tweeted out a demo of using LDK, I think in August or so of this year. So,
I mean, it's pretty funny. Like all the people who say Bitcoin moves too slow and nothing new happens. And I've like devoted my life to try and keep track of it. And you still miss things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Full of shit.
I never understand people saying Bitcoin's like dead or boring or slow. I spend full time on it and can barely keep up.
So. Exactly. So where do you want to go next here? Before we move on, so the whole thing is built on top of Rust Lightning.
That's correct. And then on the library is built in Rust. And then there's the language bindings I mentioned. So there's like a Java layer, a Swift layer, and we're building out support for other languages too.
So right now, There's six major Lightning implementations. You have LND, you have C Lightning, you have Eclair, you have Immortan, you have Electrum's Python Lightning, and you have Breeze's Go. I think it's a Go based implementation. Is there another one that I'm forgetting? There's one that I'm forgetting.
Well, Moon has done a lot of customized work too. the node, the portions of the node that run the phone, I think are pretty much all their own implementation.
Right now, I mean, I don't have like hard numbers in front of me, but right now the estimates are like around like 70% of the Lightning Network is running LND. Do you expect that number to go down? Do you expect there to be, you know, multiple implementations with over 20% of liquidity on the network, or do you think it's going to be like more of a winner takes all kind of thing?
I think it's really early to like speculate on winner takes all. There's so many trade-offs with different, like we said earlier, in terms of getting the right user experience, security, privacy. And then, of course, between enterprise and mobile, I can imagine in the future, like internet, like IoT devices, payment terminals, all kinds of devices where Lightning gets added. So I think there'll be room for multiple implementations for quite a while. I do expect, LDK has 0% market share right now because nothing is live. I think Matt Kroll and a few other people have test nodes that are on mainnet.
Right.
But in terms of actual services with users, nothing's live yet. So right now it's 0%. So I certainly expect LDK to increase in 2022.
It's a bold prediction, Steve.
Yeah. So it should be more than 0% next year.
But do you think it's important that we have many implementations with like a decent adoption?
At least for the next several years, just because there's so much room for experimentation and there's right. So many trade-offs. I can't imagine any one implementation satisfying all of that. So the last thing we want to do right now in such early days with Lightning Network is to restrict what's possible or what's experimented with. So maybe we can chat again in like 3 or 4 years to see how things have evolved. And then maybe long-term, it sort of boils down to 2 or 3 implementations.
Fair enough. That makes sense to me. We're still very much in the experimentation phase, trying to see what works. So where do you want to go next? You want to discuss B-Trust?
We could. We could kind of round out Spiral stuff, direct Spiral stuff if you want. Maybe speak a little bit to the design community.
Let's hit it.
I think you had a recent show on that, so we don't have to repeat that. But I'm happy to speak a little bit about.
Yeah, let's talk about it. The Bitcoin design community, you guys spearheaded this.
Yeah, I'm really proud of what that community's done. It's genesis when we started Spiral or Square Crypto at the time, we wanted to impact design in the space because we felt it had little investment. And we initially set out to hire a full-time designer on the Spiral team. And so we interviewed many, many dozens of talented designers and really never found someone who checked all the boxes. But I think, after like 8 months of meeting over 50 people, we looked, reflected on that. And I think we were looking for a unicorn candidate. And what we realized is that we've met amazing designers with different skill sets, all of whom shared one thing, which is that they all were passionate about Bitcoin. Another thing they shared is that they were kind of operating on their own island in terms of how to engage and get involved with Bitcoin and communicating with others, which is very foreign to most designers. Like creative people love to interact with other creatives, and that's a pretty common part of their process. So we switched our strategy and we're like, hey, why don't we initiate and help kickstart the Bitcoin design community? A free, open community. This is not a Spiral or Block centric or initiative. It's for the Bitcoin community. It's a public good. And so we kicked it off about a year and a half ago. And I'm really, really happy with how it's evolved. It is completely independent of, or I shouldn't say completely. I mean, we fund several people working on it, but it runs independent of myself or Spiral or Block. And I'm pretty confident that it is now evolved and has enough accomplishments and momentum that it'll be sustainable even if Spiral just went away. So I'm really happy with that. They've produced a design guide, which is live and available. They published version one of the design guide last June, and now they're adding Lightning Network in a big way to the design guide. And this really, you know, you can bundle this design guide in with BDK and LDK as just being a really great resource for any builder looking to build a great Bitcoin and Lightning application. The design guide, you know, it obviously doesn't dictate what people do with the design, but it's just intended to be guidelines, best practices, walk through some of the trade-offs that you'll need to think about, and just be a helpful resource. And I've really noticed in the past 6 months that more and more people are becoming aware of it and using it and trusting it. And so hopefully that keeps going. And another project the design community's done is a wallet improvement project, where members of the design community are selecting a different wallet in the space, evaluating it, and just documenting areas of improvement, and even not just documenting or pointing out problems, but trying to come up with solutions. So they're coming up with designs in Figma. They're going to the project's GitHub and opening up issues or PRs to help improve that wallet. And it's been a great relationship with the wallet projects too, because they've been very welcoming to this and embraced it. And we already see a bunch of wallets have made improvements that have emerged based on that feedback.
So in a lot of ways, I mean, it's kind of in the same spirit as BDK and LDK, just on the design side.
Yep. Yep.
Which is so
all three of these share, you know, let's make it easier to build awesome Bitcoin applications.
Which, I mean, is pretty cool coming from the perspective of Block, where like a lot of people, it's still weird calling it Block, by the way, the perspective of formerly Square, where you're basically like building the foundation for other, you know, open source projects to come and compete with you.
Yep. Yep.
Gotta love it. So, I mean, the Bitcoin design community, I've seen massive, massive impact by them already. When I talk to different wallet teams and stuff, it's almost expected that they're going to tell me that they already have gotten help, and we're very happy with the help they've received from that community. I believe they have a Slack, like a public Slack. If a freak wants to help with the Bitcoin design community, how do they do that?
Well, the best place to start, just go to bitcoin.design, that website. And from there, you can find everything. You can find the Slack that you mentioned. You can see the guide that I spoke to, as well as just resources on how to contribute, how to get involved. And in fact, there's over 2,200 creatives have joined that Slack. So it's just been a
damn
phenomenal response. And many dozen are actively involved. There's a regular community call every 3 weeks, along with an associated newsletter. So if you're a little bit short on time, but interested, I think reading that newsletter every 3 weeks and joining the community call, which has recently been hosted on Twitter Spaces, that's a good way to learn more and be involved. And then, yeah, if you're a builder, if you have a wallet or an application and would like review, there's also a design review recurring meeting that's every 3 weeks. And I just think it's a phenomenal resource. I worked at Google for almost a decade and worked at other tech companies. And it's the same kind of design review process that you'd see at a company like that, yet in an open source style and fashion. And it's welcome for anyone who would like some feedback from this talented community.
Awesome. I mean, I feel like, especially among like the Bitcoin enthusiast crowd and the more hardcore Bitcoiners, like we tend to discount the impact of good design. But if we're talking about onboarding the next billion Bitcoiners, it doesn't just stop at BDK or LDK or more wallets that are more powerful. Like UX and design is a major aspect of that. when you have new users trying to onboard onto these wallets. Like you shouldn't need like an hour long, 45 minute guide on how to use something for a new user to get comfortable. They should be able to open the app, open the wallet, and the design, the UX should kind of guide them through best practices and how to use it in a relatively easy fashion.
Totally agree.
So I don't know what else I have on this list that is Spiral specific. Do you want to, we already spoke about the grants a little bit.
One more shout out maybe for grants.
Yeah. I mean, you can give as many shout outs as you want. I mean, like I said, you guys are funding so many people, I can't even keep track of it. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to go through all of them because that would be an hour show in and of itself. But one more I wanted to mention is Summer of Bitcoin, which I thought was just, it started this past year and I just thought it was a phenomenal initiative. One of the biggest bottlenecks in open source Bitcoin development is just finding talented people who are interested and trained to contribute. Funding and getting dollars is certainly one aspect, but it doesn't end there because you actually need to find people to match those dollars with. And so Summer of Bitcoin's an initiative that started in India, and they opened up an application process, I think, to something like 5 universities in India, got an incredible response. So this is for a summer internship, and I think they had over 4,000 applications.
Wow.
A handful of universities. So really incredible. So that was a huge process just to narrow down. I think they had 52 or 53 interns this past summer, and they matched those interns not at companies, but with open source Bitcoin projects. So LDK, BDK, Bitcoin Core, LND, and many other open source Bitcoin projects. And each intern, merged a PR or did some kind of project, and they got paid a stipend in Bitcoin. So just a great start to that, because historically there's been almost non-existent open source Bitcoin development from people in India, and it's a country so rich in talented engineers. So it was great to see some traction there in India. But the Summer of Bitcoin program has global ambition, so they're coming back for a second year this coming year, opening up their internship program to people all around the world. So Spiral's proud supporters of that. We're funding the person who's running the show, and funding the stipends. Chaincode has been phenomenal with this too. They've lent I think not just money but also a lot of their time helping that get up off the ground. So really happy with Summer of Bitcoin. People should check it out. For those listening who are developers or potential mentors, the program would love to match up mentors with mentees. And if you're listening and you would like to apply, you can go to the Summer of Bitcoin website to check it out.
And what is that website?
It is summerofbitcoin.org.
Awesome. Before I forget, we have SB Design in the comments mentioning that the Bitcoin design community is doing a meet and greet on Thursday. There's a link to an issue on their GitHub that has the description there. I'm sure you can get to it by going to bitcoin.design if you're interested. We also have Ben the Carmen in the comments mentioning that they got 2 great contributors through the Summer of Bitcoin initiative at SuredBits. I also know that Wiz, one of the lead maintainers of mempool.space, which I have streaming during every dispatch, also got some interns through that program. So it's just a really fantastic initiative that really helped a lot of projects throughout the industry. I also, before we continue, we have MG Blazer in the comments asking you, Steve, what, you said you worked at Google for 10 years. how has that been different than your role at Spiral?
Let's see. I mean, there's lots of differences. Maybe I'll start with like similarities. I do feel like, yeah, so I was at Google from 2006 to 2015. And during that time, it was still, especially in the first 4 years I was there, still very much a company that was engineering driven, engineering led. I worked in product management. And so I worked in Google Maps on mobile phones. I was the lead product manager for that. I had to work with engineers across the world, lots of different locations, and to affect the roadmap or the user experience or improving the product, I had to build relationships with those developers among many other people. And that consensus building, that process, I think that carries over to Bitcoin and open source. It's even more extreme in Bitcoin and decentralized nature. But the skills that I developed doing that at Google did transfer over and help. Let's see. And yeah, how are they different? Well, I mean, I'm really lucky to be working on Spiral. Jack Dorsey and Block, fund Spiral, but it's completely hands off. All Jack asks of us is that we just help Bitcoin succeed. And Jack and no one at Block gives us any direction or tells us no. It's really amazing. So we're very fortunate. At Google, I had a lot of latitude as well, but not to this extreme.
Awesome. I had no idea. I had no idea that you were, one of your main projects was Google Maps over there.
I was the lead product manager for Google Maps on mobile phones for 4 years.
Really, really great app you guys built over there that I unfortunately cannot use due to privacy issues. That was definitely one of the hard ones to cut out in my privacy journey. So
I also worked on, I was the lead BM for the location platform, Wi-Fi and cell tower and GPS, which has all kinds of interesting privacy considerations.
Wow. Well. Thanks for that, Steve. Really appreciate it. So while we're on the privacy topic, Satrinity mentioned earlier, and he just noticed that we mentioned privacy again. He is a true ride or die freak. He's always in the comments. Is there anything specifically privacy focused that you guys are working on with respect to BDK and LDK?
Privacy is very important to us. Even outside of BDK, LDK, we fund, we have a grant to Chris Belcher working on CoinSwap. Right. And Lightning Network in and of itself, if successful and adopted, I think it will improve privacy for Bitcoiners. But there's nothing, actually, that's not true. So one thing that it's not necessarily specific to LDK, but it's a priority for the project, is to do routing and pathfinding for Lightning on the client device, so on a mobile device, which is a hard challenge because it's a lot of data that has to be downloaded to the phone. And if it's been a while since you've opened your wallet app, it can create latency issues. That's the tension there and the technical challenge. So Arik on our team is actively working on a project right now to reduce the amount of information that needs to be downloaded to the phone. And Blockstream has done some work on this as well. So hopefully we can get that to a sweet spot where it's still a good user experience. You don't have a bad lag when opening the app, and yet your payment routing can be done on the phone, which definitely enhances your privacy.
So the alternative being, if you're not doing it that way, then you have a server handling that pathfinding, right? And the server knows exactly how you're paying and where you're paying and whatnot.
Yeah, it would learn everything. There's also trampoline payments, which I think like the folks at Async and others are working on. It's kind of a hybrid between the two. So that's another option that's being developed. So again, like most of these trade-offs, when if you're trying to do non-custodial as self-sovereign as possible on mobile, it's really hard to deliver a great user experience. So there's lots of bells and knobs to try to tune that. So I think we need to have dozens of experiments, including privacy, to see what's right. And it'll improve over time too. We might need to make some certain concessions over the next few years to have an adequate user experience for certain users, but maybe in 3, 4, 5 years, we'll make it so you don't have to make certain sacrifices.
Awesome. And I would just add that, you know, I have a ton of respect for the work that Chris Belcher is doing, and you know, you guys supporting him in his coin swap work really personally was very massive to me. It was a big deal to me to see a project out of a large publicly traded financial company funding directly financial privacy work. So I really did appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. I mean, it's a good example of our corporate funder not having much say in what we fund. So, I agree. I was really proud of that grant in particular, and looking forward to the future of that. Another thing, back to LDK and privacy, another thing that will be really important for next year within the broader Lightning ecosystem and LDK specifically is just integration of Taproot into Lightning. And there's a number of different touch points, and it's pretty involved, but that'll undoubtedly improve privacy as well.
Where do you see that specifically impacting the end user? And
let's see. So for privacy, I mean, I think most end users won't even be aware of it, but right. They'll just happen to have a better privacy. You know, number one, when closing Lightning channels, when using Taproot, it'll look like, at least on a cooperative close, it'll look like any other payment, like a single signature, right. And not be identifiable like it currently is.
Where like obviously looks like a 2 of 2 multi-sig.
Exactly. And then a transition from HTLCs to PTLCs is another way to improve privacy. There's been a few papers written about privacy, some privacy weaknesses in Lightning, and I think PTLCs can shore up at least one or two of those. And then something that is less privacy related and more security related, I would like to see multi-sig supported in Lightning Network, so that, for example, you could have a yes. two of three wallet or any K of N, but like, for example, 2 of 3, and have the Lightning scripts support that. And currently it's only single signature. So I think something we'll get to a little bit later in the show is future 2 of 3 type of wallets that I'm excited about, and not only supporting that at the on-chain Bitcoin protocol level, but also Lightning Network.
Yeah, I mean, it would already be a massive benefit to people, but especially in the future, I mean, if we do have people that are onboarding directly onto Lightning. But like I had a conversation with Eric Siri on Dispatch earlier, who's working on a Charmian eCash, federated Charmian eCash implementation for a Lightning wallet. And one of the big bottlenecks for him is that the actual Lightning component is hard to multi-sig out. And he doesn't want to build that on his own. So hopefully we can have that. And like right now in the wild, we have the Bitcoin Beach wallet, which is trying to do like this almost like multi-sig custodial wallet where the keys are held by a trusted members of the community. But they can't do that with the Lightning portion, even though the majority of payments are Lightning. So they're just running a single sig custodial Lightning wallet with the majority of the funds held in multisig on chain, and they're just basically writing it off. Like if that wallet gets compromised or exit scammed or something, like you only lose the Lightning portion, you don't lose the on chain portion.
Got it. Yeah, there's no doubt. No doubt it's there's going to be a lot of demand for it. I've yet to even initiate any kind of conversations with protocol devs. So I don't know how much discussion there's already been at that level. But if Laulu or Rusty or are listening, I'll be chatting with them soon.
Awesome. So far we've talked about LDK, we've talked about BDK, we've talked about various Spiral grants, we've talked about the Bitcoin design community. What do you want to talk about next?
How about B-Trust?
B-Trust, let's go. What's B-Trust?
Yeah, so earlier this year, Jack Dorsey announced a new Bitcoin endowment that he and Jay-Z are funding and supporting called B-Trust, that's intended to be an endowment for a new entity that's focused on Bitcoin, focused on free open source software development. And Jack would be a blind trust. So he'd be completely hands off with this. And 500 Bitcoin is a lot of money. Yeah. So it's a very, very sizable gift. And I don't get the sense that the Bitcoin community really appreciates yet, or is even aware of it, let alone appreciates how impactful this can be over the next 5 to 10 years. The process for how to go about this is to start with selecting a board and then be able to transition the Bitcoin and empower that board to go ahead and select a lead and build a team to do great things. So we put out a call for applications for board members and got completely overwhelmed last spring with over 7,000 applications.
Wow.
It was a lot. So
you threw out all the applications and you decided to start.
Well, that's it. I mean, one way you can go is like, well, I've heard of a few of these names, let's just go with them. But we wanted to take a responsible approach where we really did go through all these applications and have a really thorough process. So there's no way that myself or one person could do this on their own. So fortunately, we found an awesome volunteer team, Carolee and Jonas from Chaincode. Nice. You're probably familiar with them. Jacob, who is at Lightning Labs. Haley, who's on my team. And Lawrence, who's on the Cash App team. So the six of us have been working on this for the past, I don't know, 5-6 months. There were multiple filters and levels through this application process. And ultimately we did a couple video interviews with 30 or so candidates and narrowed it down to about half a dozen that just recently met with Jack. The board has now been selected. They've been notified, and we'll announce soon who the board members are. But
how soon, Steve?
hopefully before the end of the year. That's the hope. But I can't say enough about the applicants in this process. I was just really blown away by the quality of applicants and their depth of understanding and love and care of Bitcoin. People
that's from awesome.
All over Africa and India and just in Middle East, all over the world. So that was a really positive experience. So the hope is that beginning in January, the new year, they can get started and good things will come.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but B-Trust is primarily focused on Africa, right?
The Africa and India is what has been communicated. I think it's a little bit TBD and up to the board to figure that out. You could argue that maybe, you know, Africa in and of itself is a big enough opportunity and challenge to just focus on one continent. You could argue that to do both. You could argue to expand to other important emerging and developing markets like South America and Central America and Southeast Asia, et cetera. So I think the board will have to evaluate that and figure out the best plan.
But I mean, in general, if you're funding open source projects that are focused on the developing world, I mean, even if their focus is on a specific geographical location, I imagine they'll have applications everywhere.
That would be, I mean, just like even the stuff that Spiral does or Chainco right. does, I mean, hopefully it helps everyone around the world. I would expect what you just said to be true. At the same time, I would also hope and expect that there are things that are done specifically to enable the cultivation and growth and development of people in Africa and India working on Bitcoin and also just better understanding local market needs and challenges that don't exist maybe in the US right. or other Western countries.
Right. And I mean, we don't want to not trying to put all Africans and all Indians in the same boat. Like, there's obviously different nuances depending on localities and situations.
Yeah, I mean, there's 54 countries in Africa. So even just focusing on Africa, it's incredibly diverse with a lot of challenges. And so, so the board will have a lot of work cut out for them, but I think it's a really exciting opportunity for them.
I mean, one of the coolest parts of BTrust to me is this idea that the endowment is in Bitcoin. So like, who even knows? I mean, when they made the announcement, I think they made the announcement, what was it? It was like February of last year or January of last year.
Yeah. I think the price of Bitcoin is about the same as it was when they announced.
No. It was like 24K or something, 25K at the time. So the endowment's already doubled in purchasing power. Who knows?
Like, coin market cap right now is saying that Bitcoin is $789 billion per coin. So,
oh shit! So that endowment's huge now.
We might as well just end the show right now. We can all retire.
I'm sure Twitter's freaking out about that, and we just have our dispatch blinders on right now. When I first started the show, I would show the live price, but now we just show what matters. So you have a live view of the mempool. So I mean, I don't really care where the price is right now. We can check after, but that it's pretty cool when you start to think about it. Like, so you take, so it was Jack and Jay-Z. They each put in 250 Bitcoin at whatever price it was at the time, which I'm telling you, I'm pretty sure it was like 25K or 30K. And then BTrust is going to be pulling from that, endowment, but keeping it in Bitcoin. So presumably, like, we could end up in a situation like if we're correct and Bitcoin does increase in price with adoption, and as I eloquently state sometimes, that is designed to pump forever, we can end up in a situation where this endowment basically never runs out, that it's just it's a forever endowment, which is pretty insane to start to try and wrap your head around.
Yeah, exactly. So a big question the board will have to answer is how to manage that treasury, whether to keep all of it in Bitcoin or convert some to like a stable coin or something.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Well, these are possibilities that they'll need to determine that.
But they're allowed to do that. The board can do whatever they want. They can just fire sell it all if they want.
Yeah. Jack is very much a believer in impact, you know, putting the right people in place and then really entrusting them. So the board's going to have incredible, responsibility for this. But it'll be up to them. I mean, I like it's my own expectation that most or all would be kept in Bitcoin, like you're saying.
Yeah, that's what my understanding.
Absolutely has the potential to, you know, appreciate a lot. But yeah, they'll also have to determine like what the annual budgets are, how quickly to draw down on that endowment. You could certainly manage it so that it definitely is perpetual and never runs out. Is that the right call or not? Maybe, maybe not. But it should certainly be very long lasting in any case.
Like I feel like when my grandkids are reading about like the newest B Trust initiative, like if they have less than 100 Bitcoin in their treasury at that point, then they fuck something up. But that's just my
I like that. That's a good measuring stick for B Trust and the board.
Okay. So what should we discuss next, Steve?
Let's see. Should we talk about the mining initiative at Block?
Yeah, let's talk about this mining initiative. This is the open source design for an ASIC.
Yeah. So everyone should be aware. Again, I'm on the Spiral team, very much team Bitcoin, outward facing. So I'm not on the mining team at Block, but I have been working closely with them. I'm really passionate about what they're doing, so I'm happy to share a little bit of what they're up to beyond what Jack tweeted a month or so ago. So Block is getting into Bitcoin mining in a pretty substantial way, which I'm excited about. And but the, you know, one observation is that the ASIC chips themselves, there's very few suppliers. They're geographically concentrated, and they operate in a way that doesn't necessarily lend itself to optimizing for an open ecosystem and really sort of growing the number of partners and different companies in the space that can come up with cool new designs for mining rigs. So with that opportunity, the team at Block is interested and is exploring doing a custom ASIC chip themselves, as well as a mining rig design, and doing it in as open a way as possible to enable other companies to build their own mining rigs as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a fantastic initiative. I mean, I think you somehow understated the current issue of ASIC manufacturers. I mean, there's two main ASIC manufacturers right now, and that's Bitmain and MicroBT. MicroBT makes the Wutz miners. Bitmain makes the Ant miners. They're both out of Asia. The project lead, the founder of MicroBT, is actually one of the ex main guys of Bitmain. So in a lot of ways, they're kind of one company that was split into two. And it would be great to see more competition there. I my understanding too was like this idea that it was almost more of the focus was going to be more on like a consumer focus level, like a model for an ASIC that like all our ASICs nowadays are like basically designed to be put in a warehouse. They're like made for industrial applications. Obviously on Dispatch, we've gone through many times about how to use them for home mining, and it can be done, but at their core, they're basically designed to be placed in server racks at a warehouse. Am I wrong the initiative by the Block is the initiative by Block, I guess there's no the by Block, is focused more on like more of a retail kind of environment, or am I
both right and wrong? So definitely includes that, which I think is super exciting, but not exclusively that. So at this point, it's early enough, and that it's being explored both for like industrial farm mining, as well as individual home mining. Also looking at what can be done, what can be optimized for sustainable energy, in particular, intermittent sustainable energy has, you know, certain unique challenges, both the economic model, but also the equipment itself. If it's going to be turned on and off frequently, it needs to be designed to support a lot more cycles than maybe some of the existing equipment.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm already hearing about the existing equipment. Like, you don't want to turn it off and on much. Like, the lifetime of your miner is going to go down substantially.
Right. So definitely design consideration from the team at Block will be that. And the firmware and the software as well, being able to boot up, be able to reboot very quickly, will be important. You know, the folks at Brains have already done good work in that area, which is fantastic. So anyway, that'll be an important consideration. But I think the environment we're operating right now, we've spoken to a number of companies who see an opportunity in the market to design a mining rig, the actual like industrial design and the systems design itself. They see an opportunity in the market to optimize and customize that, but they're unable to source ASIC chips.
Right. Directly.
So we think there's a huge opportunity if you can just sell ASIC chips to partners in the ecosystem. We're going to see a great expansion of mining into new segments and meeting new needs that are not met right now by one or two suppliers.
Well, like a key aspect of their business model is to keep everything proprietary. Like you mentioned, they like keep their chip designs very close to their chest. Like nothing's open. The firmware is all closed source. Like you mentioned, Brains with Two Eyes by Slush, who've had many of their team members on Dispatch in the past. They have their own open source firmware that you can then flash onto Bitmain ASICs, but out of the box, it's all closed. So,
yeah. And if you chat with the guys at Brains, you'll they'll talk about how challenging it can be to build that firmware because it's such a closed system. So,
yeah, they almost have to hack their way onto it, basically.
I think they do quite a bit, they have to do reverse engineering. So the plan from Block is to be the opposite of that, be very open, be as open as possible. So any kind of mining rig designs that come from Block, the hope and expectation is that they'll be open source so others can leverage those designs and use that. Any chip that's produced by Block, the data sheets are intended to be open.
But is Block going to actually be selling miners, or are they basically just putting the specs out there for other people to build them?
I mean, at this point, there's nothing definitive, so
it's
all about exploration, but definitely looking at both is of interest. Producing a chip and selling the chip, also producing a mining rig and selling that mining rig. You could imagine, maybe Block decides, that they can produce a really great product for intermittent renewable energy mining, whether it be solar or wind, and so they might build a rig around that and sell to that market while still selling the chip and any kind of open source provide any kind of open source system designs to other partners who build mining rigs for other markets or even the same markets and compete. So anything's on the table there.
It's still early days, very much.
It's still early days. One thing that I should mention that a lot of folks probably have no idea this is the case, but Block actually has, this is not like completely out of the blue that Block would do hardware. And I think most people are familiar, Square has always made hardware in the payment.
From the very beginning.
From the very beginning. So hardware is in the DNA of the company. But even ASICs, for 6 years now, Square has designed and built custom ASICs for their payment terminals. So the company already has ASIC engineers and all the experience that comes.
Wait, really? Like the chips in the Square payment terminals I guess those are still Square payment terminals, are made by Block?
Yeah, some of the chips are. Yep.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So the company already has, engineering chops and expertise in that area, working with foundries and just all of that. So it's not like it's not like a software company in Silicon Valley just deciding to do chips. Having said that, there's a tremendous amount of knowledge needed to do Bitcoin mining rigs. And so, you know, the team's going to have to learn a lot. The team is very interested in partnering with others. So the, if we, we've already been speaking to a bunch of companies in the space, but if there's others who are excited about the opportunity around a more open ecosystem for mining hardware and software, then we would love to speak to them.
I wonder if we have like freaks that don't even remember that they're predated, that they never had any experience with the little headphone jack square credit card readers where you just like plug. I mean, there's probably some freaks that don't even know what a headphone jack is nowadays.
Yeah, exactly. That's funny.
But it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing how those square terminals are everywhere now. So many businesses are using those square terminals.
Last thing I'd mention on mining, Stratum V2 is a next generation mining protocol.
Yes.
Yeah, it's something that Brains has done a lot of work on, and Slushpool. Matt Carallo and the Spiral team worked with them to help define it. Matt had previously worked on a protocol called BetterHash.
That was like he proposed it first, I think, before Stratum V2 was even a thing.
Yeah, I believe that's the right chronology. And so Stratum V2, I think, has most or all of what Matt was hoping to see in BetterHash. And one thing Spiral's done, we have a grant to a developer that goes by FI3, and he has been working for almost a year now on a neutral open source implementation of Stratum V2 that that can be used by any mining pool, any miner in the space. And so the anything that the block team's doing with respect to mining rigs and chips will definitely have Stratum V2 in mind and be optimizing for that.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, right now, if you buy a ASIC out of the box, whether that's Bitmain or MicroBT, you cannot use Stratum V2. If you get a Bitmain miner that supports Brains firmware, open source firmware, then you can flash Brains onto it, and then you can use Stratum V2 with Slush, but no other pools. So it's definitely very much early days there. If we can get more adoption, that would be fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah, so there's, you know, I think there's a number of opportunities to improve decentralization within mining. One, at the chip level. Two, just geographically. You know, it would be fantastic if Block and maybe others who are getting into the mining space, like Blockstream is as well, but just more and more, like you said, more competition, but also more supply chains that are resilient, not dependent on one particular country or region, will really help decentralization, and the adoption of Stratum V2 will help as well.
No, I mean, I think it's a noble cause, and it's sorely needed. I do wonder. I mean, mining is a massively competitive space. I do wonder how those dynamics end up working out if there's nothing proprietary there between chips. It should be interesting.
Yeah, I think, well, you know, it's to be determined what the exact business model is. But
yeah,
I mean, because currently there's not that many chip manufacturers, I think there's actually attractive revenue and potential for the chip, you know, the chips themselves.
I mean, if you can undercut prices, I mean, and also there's an ideological bent to a certain extent, if you can get it close enough.
Yeah, if we're correct in this view that an open system will be much better than a closed system, I think, you know, those participating in this open ecosystem can all win and can all profit.
Awesome. We have Saturnity in the comments, and like, feel free to tell us both to fuck off. but he's asking, is Spiral working with Square to integrate Bitcoin Lightning into Square point of sale terminals?
So nothing I can comment on specifically, but yes, in the sense that we're definitely talking with teams at Block to integrate Lightning and any software we're working on, BDK, LDK. But having said that, I have had many conversations this year with folks at Coinbase and Kraken and blockchain.com and many, many companies in the space, smaller projects as well, open source projects, about adopting our software. So
awesome.
So we're, the Spiral team, again, it's a really unique initiative and project, because we work with companies who would be considered competitors to Cash App and Block. We're just optimizing for the adoption of Bitcoin. So we're talking to a number of different companies and projects to adopt BDK and LDK.
Awesome. Appreciate you answering that question to that extent. I was not going to ask it unless the Trinity brought it up, because I have a lot of respect for you and I knew it was putting you on the spot. So I think we should move on to this next topic, which is a topic that personally I am extremely excited about, which is this hardware wallet initiative.
Absolutely.
You want to go into this for the freaks?
Yeah. So I think it was June. I think it was at the Bitcoin conference in Miami that Block announced, or Square at the time, announced a hardware wallet project, which I'm equally super excited about. One thing to make clear is that it's not just a hardware wallet, but it's a combination of hardware and software, and the software aspect actually has me personally more excited. I think there's definitely room to innovate and improve the hardware, but the type of software wallet that team is looking at has me really excited. They're exploring doing a 2 of 3 multi-sig wallet sort of out of the box. And I think a 2 of 3 offers really interesting user experience and security properties that a single sig or other variations don't have. There's also the potential to build a wallet that can be both a savings, a savings and a spending wallet all in one, and apply different UX security trade-offs to whether it's spending or savings.
So let's break this down for a second. So right now, if you use Cash App, which is a product of Block, it is a fully custodial wallet. My understanding of this hardware wallet initiative is that you have a situation where instead of Cash App holding the keys, Cash App holds one key, or whatever wallet this ends up being, but Block holds one key. One key is on the mobile device locally, and then one key is this really cheap hardware wallet that interfaces with the mobile phone. So presumably, if something happens and Block doesn't want you to send your transaction, you can use the hardware wallet to send. But as long as Block is fine with you sending the transaction, you can keep the hardware wallet in your drawer or something, and your mobile phone signs on one side and the server signs on the other side using whatever normal fraud detection you have. Is that the basic understanding of this project?
Yeah, I mean, let me first say that I'm not on the team, so I don't speak for the team.
Right.
And secondly, it's still super early, so there's no commitment to any particular,
of course,
UX. But having said that, here's at least from my own view, personal view, and hope for the project, is what you just described, where you have the three keys,
fucking awesome,
one on the phone, one on the hardware wallet, one in the cloud. It's non-custodial in the sense that even if the cloud and the cloud server goes away, you still have your hardware wallet and your phone's key. And the spending experience can be just as simple and easy as using Cash App or Venmo or any kind of other type of payment app on your phone. And the customer wouldn't even have to think about keys or two of three or multi-sig. They don't have to know anything about that because you're signing with the key in the phone and the one in the cloud, and that's all kind of hidden under the covers. To protect the customer from having their entire wallet drained in case their phone becomes compromised, one could put a spending velocity limit in the cloud, such that it would only sign a transaction for certain amounts. And there might be other policies.
Like stuff that Cash App already has, like fraud detection, algo or whatever.
Yep. And then if the customer wants to spend a larger amount, that's an opportunity to access their hardware wallet, in which it would be unlimited. And again, self-sovereign, you wouldn't be dependent on any server or third party service. But it allows the customer to, they can secure their hardware wallet in a way that's not as accessible perhaps as your phone. But for daily spending or frequent spending, you wouldn't need to access it.
And they don't even have to know of that as a hardware wallet. That could just be, this is your secret device, like keep it safe. And in a worst case scenario, you're going to need this to spend your funds.
Correct. Yep. And what
it's going to be super cheap
on the software side. I think the team's definitely exploring using Taproot for two of three. And also I think the team really cares about, growing this to lots of users. So Lightning Network and as an approach to scaling is on the table and being explored. And this gets back to an earlier conversation about what Spiral and the LDK team and what the broader Lightning ecosystem needs to be looking at is multi-sig, building two of three into Lightning Network so that it could be possible in this wallet or anyone else looking to do a similar type of wallet, as well as integrating Taproot into Lightning Network.
That's awesome. I mean, I love the trade-off balance with this kind of setup.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, a key aspect here, right, is that actual hardware device is going to be super cheap, air-gapped. I mean, I don't know if it's been announced specifically, but my guess would be something, and you don't have to comment on this, my guess specifically be something the NFC based, so that you could just tap it to the phone. You don't need a battery on it. Accessible to the whole world. Most of the developing world already has a mobile phone, so they would just need a $10 device, a $5 device, and they would have relatively strong security guarantees and a very easy UX.
Yeah. Actually, folks that are interested in this, they have a Substack. I think it's squareselfcustody.substack.com, and they've published a couple newsletters, and I think they plan to regularly publish newsletters. In their most recent one, they did say that they referenced NFC as being the interface, the most likely interface that they'll use to communicate. So, which is definitely interesting. Choice. I think it's a good choice. But in contrast to using Bluetooth or USB or QR codes or other mechanisms, I believe it's the case that they very much want to accommodate a world and a customer who is mobile first or mobile only, and not assume a laptop or desktop computer system.
Yeah, I mean, the major trade-off here from my perspective is the lack of a dedicated screen on the hardware device to actually verify what you're signing on the hardware device itself. But I think the trade-off basically comes down to cost. So presumably you could do the same exact setup with a device similar to like a seed signer that has a camera on it and a screen, and you could do it all through QR codes. But the advantage of an NFC-based device is no battery, extremely low cost. Like, you can drill down that cost tremendously. So as with everything with Bitcoin, it'd be nice if there's options there.
Well, definitely one of the more controversial things being considered is, as you mentioned, no display. And back in June in the original tweet announcement, it was noted that that was being considered. you know, the advantages with no display, like you, as you just mentioned, it, you can hit a lower price point, and a lower price point has a lot of advantages. You can reach a lot more people around the world. You can have a much simpler device. But there needs to be an evaluation, and hopefully there's a lot of feedback from the broader community on the security trade-offs. My hope is that if one assumes a multi-sig 203, as well as perhaps some other design aspects, that it will be a credible approach and meet a security bar for the types of uses for the product. But that's that still needs to be evaluated.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it comes back to what we were discussing earlier, that it'd be great if Bitcoiners have many different options with different trade-offs. I mean, another major trade-off with this kind of model is that obviously who's ever running the server, whether that's Block or someone else, has full purview into your transactions. So it's not sovereign in a privacy way. But if you compare that to a hosted custodial wallet where you have no privacy and you have no control over your funds at the same time, it is a massive improvement there. And there's going to be all different options for Bitcoiners. And as they move up through their Bitcoin journey, they might upgrade to more private options, and it's all just a path.
Yep.
We don't have this on the list, but do you have any interest in discussing TBD at all, the decentralized exchange proposal?
I can talk about it a little bit. I think it might be good to have a separate show where you have Mike or someone from the TBD team on, but
I guess I can tease it to the freaks. Marty and I are going to have a discussion with Mike sometime in January.
Yeah, I'm happy to help facilitate that.
So we'll leave it at that. But TBD to the freaks. They probably have already heard about it on Rabbit Hole Recap if they're listening to that show. But it's this idea.
I don't think there's like any like unique points I could speak to that are different than what's already been publicly shared. Like the white paper is published, and I think it's at a high level being communicated about what they plan to do. And beyond that, I don't really have a whole lot to add.
Fair enough. Another project I'm very excited about. And then we have Hello Bitcoin on the list. You want to discuss that a little bit?
Yeah. So one of my best friends, Matt Belez, started Hello Bitcoin. And the goal with Hello Bitcoin, if you're not familiar with it, is just to create both content and a community that's very warm and welcoming to beginners. And so it's introductory material to Bitcoin. So it's Bitcoin focused, it's all open source. And so far there's been 3 videos produced that I think are on the order of six to 10 minutes long, relatively short. Connor from my team is in the first couple of videos and does a great job.
He's great in them.
Yeah, he really cares about Bitcoin. You can tell it, and he just speaks well to it.
They have a channel on BitcoinTV.com, freaks, as well. Hello Bitcoin does. And their website is Hello Bitcoin, but it's the dot is between the O and the I. So it's hellobitco.in.
Yeah. And I really think those videos are great. But if you look at the number of views, it needs to be 100x that. So we need to find, as a community, I think everyone listening, hopefully take a look at those. And I think these can become go-to resources when you're introducing friends and family members and people new to Bitcoin. They can be really good. There's also a desire on Hello Bitcoin to grow the community aspect. I think there's an opportunity to create a warm, friendly environment that still that retains Bitcoin ethos and discipline, but is maybe a different flavor than what we see on Twitter. I do think, you know, on Twitter, I feel like it's a daily battle. I enjoy it, but it's not everyone's cup of tea. So I think there's a lot of people who would want to, you know, have an environment where they're comfortable to ask basic questions. They're genuinely trying to learn. They're not trying to like shill an altcoin or something like that. And there needs to be an environment and forum for that. So Hello Bitcoin is a possibility there. Haley on my team, I think, is going to start getting more involved with Hello Bitcoin and grow the community aspect. So I'm excited to see what can happen there.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's really great content and it's a great initiative. It's something that, you know, I've been very focused on myself, which is trying to make Bitcoin more accessible, particularly to beginners, but also to just people that are going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole and they just want to improve their understanding and their usage. So, I mean, I have a lot of respect for them. They're doing a really great job and happy to support them with the channel at bitcointv.com. And
go ahead.
We have BitKite in the comments who's running the Nashville Bitcoiners meetup. Just meetups in general, like local community meetups, I think do a lot here. And just getting them around the world and making that process easier for people to run meetups that are Bitcoin focused and focus on, in my opinion, the important things rather than, you know, trading and get rich quick schemes. So I think we're slowly moving in that direction. And I think it goes hand in hand with our earlier conversations around LDK, BDK, and Bitcoin design community, where you have actual tools that are easier to use from the ground up. So you don't need as much education. But no matter what, we're still going to need an education component because Bitcoin is so radically different than the traditional systems that people are used to, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing I wanted to point out about Hello Bitcoin is it's another example of where the Bitcoin design community has contributed and made an impact. If you look at the third video from Hello Bitcoin, there's some visuals and motion graphics, and that was done by volunteers within the design community, which I thought was awesome. The Hello Bitcoin fourth video, which will be on energy usage, which is always a fun topic to cover. It's going to be coming out soon, aiming to publish it before Christmas. We'll see if that can be met, but that also has a tremendous amount of help from the design community.
Awesome. You kind of love how it just all comes together, you know, where it's like very much a flywheel where all these different projects are helping each other out and making everything more robust in the process.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there could be a whole nother show on just that topic. I there's so many instances I've seen of team Bitcoin and people coming together, sort of loose affiliations, but we all share this common bond of wanting to see Bitcoin adoption and Bitcoin succeed. It just lowers the barriers to working, collaborate with other people on a project. Like historically, you know, you get hired by a company and you only work with people who are employees at that company. And it would be like foreign and weird to work with employees at other companies. And that's just not the case here at all. It doesn't matter who you work for, or where you're from, anyone can join forces. And there's just, you know, so maybe in another show we could talk about that, because there's many projects I've either been involved with or have observed where they happen so quickly and can get off the ground so quickly with people who have never met in real life and really haven't worked with each other before. But it's just, I feel like team Bitcoins are, there's the pillars in place to make it so there's a little friction to get projects started.
100%, Steve. I feel that too. It's a very special, community in place we find ourselves in. And I don't really think I need to tell you this, but you are always welcome on any of my shows. I love having conversations with you, and I really do appreciate all the work you're doing. I like having conversations with you online and offline. So yeah, you're always welcome.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
So, I mean, you're a busy man. We're nearing the end of our time here. Do you have anything else you want to cover? Any final thoughts, before we wrap this up?
Yeah, just wanted to mention that that we are hiring for the mining project at Block is hiring. The wallet project is as well, and my team is too. So my team's looking to hire 3 more engineers to work on LDK. So anyone listening, interested in a position on any of those teams, or know someone, I think for mining and for the wallet, just I think the best place to go would be check out the Block website for jobs. For Spiral specifically, you can reach out to me. I'm Moneyball on Twitter, or you can apply. You can go to our website and there's information about how to apply. But I think the email is apply@squarecrypto.org. Still have to change the domain name there, but for now it's that's actually on my to-do list. Apply@squarecrypto.org.
Awesome. Thank you, Steve. Huge shout out to the freaks who joined us. Thank you for joining us. And Steve, thank you so much for your work. Thank you for your time. Really do appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing you in person again sometime soon. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Bye, everyone.
Cheers.
Α, fyrir þetta Sara, glæsilegt hjá þér. Ha. Og svo erum við með næsta tónlistaratriði. Það Daði og Gagnamagnið. Think about things.
Anything and I'll listen.
Love you, freaks. Hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. Thank you again for all your support with the show. If you prefer to support the show through merch, go to citadeldispatch.com/stack. I hope you all enjoy your holiday. As a reminder, I am going to be taking a break for Christmas over the next 2 weeks. We will be back on January 4th with the Fire Dispatch and another Bitcoin Tuesday. Rabbit Hole Recap will be on Thursday, and we will not be taking any breaks for Rabbit Hole Recap, as is tradition over the last 3 years. Stay humble. Stack sats.